If you've got a Bible with you this morning, I'd like you to turn to Ruth chapter 3. We've been looking on these recent Sunday mornings at the Old Testament book of Ruth, and we really have discovered some amazing things in this chapter over the past number of weeks together, particularly about the character of God. And I trust that you've been encouraged. I know in conversations with many of you, God's really been speaking into our lives through this short series, and we conclude next Sunday morning in Ruth chapter 4. But this morning we come to the part of the story that we've all been waiting for, isn't that right? It's the romantic bit of the story. The story between man and the woman, and the boy meets girl, and at long last, after three long Sundays, we've got to the bit that we've been waiting for. But I have to say to you this morning that this chapter is far more than just a romantic story. It is most certainly a very, very romantic story between two people, and we're going to see that very clearly this morning. But as we come to Ruth chapter 3 and the violins begin to play and the romance between Boaz and Ruth finally begins to blossom, we're going to read it together. But it seems that Naomi can wait no longer. And there's a period of about 8 weeks between the end of chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3. The barley harvest comes to an end. It seems that this man Boaz is just not getting the signals, and he's not making any move towards Naomi or to Ruth at this particular point in the story. And Naomi thinks to herself, I've got to give God a helping hand. I've got to give him a bit of a shove here. And so Naomi comes up with this rather intriguing plan. So if you've got your Bible, let's have a look at Ruth chapter 3. We're going to read it together at page 269 this morning. One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself. Put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you're there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is staying, where he's lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." Intriguing story, isn't it? "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor, and she did everything that her mother-in-law told her to do. And when Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. That's been an understatement, isn't it? I've grinned at this passage several times during this week. Startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I'm your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all that you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good. Let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you're wearing and hold it out." And when he did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" That's not one of those questions. How did it go? Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed." Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, and you will find out what happens. For the man will not rest until the matter is settled today." Wow, what a chapter. But it is much more than just a romantic story. And let me remind you, for the benefit of those of you who perhaps have not been here on recent Sunday mornings, it is not just a story about two people. It's actually a story about the character of God. And here are some of the things that we've been learning about God in many ways. Although he doesn't speak directly into this story, you'll see no speech captions with God's word directly speaking into this story. These are the things that we've been learning about God, his sovereignty, that ultimately he's in control. We see it behind the story all the time. This wonderful phrase that we used last Sunday from John Piper's commentary on this series, that God plots for the glory of his people. that in this story, even though it's dark in places, we can see that God is working out his purposes for his people. We've seen that God walks with us in the darkest of times, even though we may not know it. Even though we may not think that God is actually with us, this story shows us that he actually is. And we've been looking at his providence, just the way that God works out his purpose in this story. All these things that just seem to happen because God is in control. I was thinking about the story of Ruth during the week, and in many ways it's like a storybook. I'm sure some of you who have younger children will know these kind of pop-up storybooks. And you open the page, you know the way the story, particularly if you're a grandparent or perhaps a parent of younger children, you open the storybook and the story suddenly comes to life. It's not just flat on the page anymore, you get this sort of 3D illustration of the story. And that's what's going on in Ruth. It's a storybook, it's a picture book. And the picture which popped out of chapter 1 for us was a very, very dark picture. It was as if the bottom fell out of Naomi's world. Everything that she had hoped for seemed to disappear before her. There was a famine in Bethlehem, which, as we said, ironically means the house of bread. It meant that she and her family, with her husband Elimelech, had to go to Moab. Not the wisest decision for them to make. But in order to protect their family, that's where they went to. When they got there, shortly after, with Elimelech, Naomi's husband dies. She loses her husband. She becomes a widow. We also discover that her sons marry two Moabite women, and the pain that they discover in their marriage is that they are unable to have children, that horrible pain, that horrible discovery that some couples make. And again, more disaster seems to fall onto the family of Naomi in this story. As if things couldn't get any worse, the two husbands, the two sons of Naomi, they too die. And Naomi and Ruth end up as two penniless widows making their way back to Bethlehem. They have nobody to support them. They have lost everything. They are two destitute widows, and that's how they make their way back to Bethlehem at the end of chapter 1. Until Naomi hears this wonderful promise from Ruth, and that's the only ray of hope that breaks into chapter 1. This wonderful promise, Ruth replies, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God." Wonderful promise. It's part and parcel of Ruth's conversion to the God of Israel. And she goes on to say, "Where you die, I will die." Look at that for commitment. "Where you will, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you from me." I just love that phrase. "Your people are going to be my people. Your God is going to be my God." That's Ruth's commitment to Naomi, which we've seen being worked out in this story. Chapter 2, the picture which pops up is a picture of hope. It's a picture of the providence of God. And I put these sequences together for you last week, and I'm going to repeat them again, because these are the things which just seem to happen in Ruth chapter 2. And you think, how could this be unless God is in control? Just listen to what happens in Ruth chapter 2. Ruth just happens to come to Bethlehem. Ruth just happens to be hungry. Ruth just happens to come to the fields. Ruth just happens to randomly pick a field. Ruth just happens to go into a field that belongs to a rich man. It happens that this rich man is a worshipper of God. It happens that he's in a position to marry Ruth. It happens that he will be the man who will eventually redeem this family, as we'll see in the next week or so. It happens that this man, as he marries Ruth, will actually become part of Jesus' family tree. Now, do you think that's a coincidence? Well, I don't. That's part of the providence of God being worked out in this story. Behind the scenes, it's not spelled out explicitly, but when you go through chapter 2, that's what you discover. This story is far more than just a romantic story between two people. God is at work behind the scenes, and the events that we've been looking at are part of God's preparation for the birth of King David, and eventually for the birth of Jesus Christ himself. So let's turn back to chapter 3 this morning, page 269. If you've got your Bibles in front of you, it's really helpful because we're going to go back through the story, find out what's actually happening here. And like chapter 2, as we saw last Sunday morning, this is divided quite neatly into three different scenes. The narrator is very helpful in terms of drawing our attention to different aspects of this story. The first scene that I want you to look at is in verses 1 to 6. And I've just entitled it this morning, Naomi's Risky Plan. Because that's exactly what it is. And we need to understand, as I said a few minutes ago, that between the end of chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3, there's a period of about 8 weeks. All has been going well. In verse 23 of chapter 2, we read these words. "Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished." And she lived with her mother-in-law. So far, so good. Things are going really well. They seem to have identified this man who can help them and who can provide for them. And both of these widows are fed and cared for. But it seems as you come to the end of the barley harvest that Naomi is getting a little bit antsy. She knows that God is at work. These are the things that we discovered about her last week in chapter 2. She sees that this is the provision of God for her and also for Ruth. And she's able to say to Ruth, look, I see the blessing of God. Blessed be the man who took notice of you. The Lord bless this person. But as the harvest comes to an end and Naomi's thoughts and attention is turned towards her daughter-in-law Ruth, some serious problems need to be addressed. You see, it's highly likely that Ruth is going to outlive Naomi. Naomi's the older woman. Ruth seems to be a much younger person in this story. She's a foreign woman in Bethlehem. Who's going to provide for her? Who's going to care for her? The only hope is that Ruth will find rest, as Naomi puts it back in chapter 1, rest in the home of another husband. You see, we need to do this kind of cultural transition in this passage. In Naomi and Ruth's day, marriage wasn't just a romantic ideal. It was a very practical matter. Because in that culture, your marriage, if you were a woman, provided you with a place of safety and security from the perils and the poverty of widowhood. Ruth's far away from her family. She's in a land that she hasn't grown up in, and there's a whole lot at stake. And it seems as if time is running out. You sort of get the flow of this story. We're coming towards the beginning of chapter 3. Naomi's beginning to think, well, God has blessed us. He's provided for us. But what about this connection between Naomi and Boaz? Oh, Ruth and Boaz, sorry. And if you read verses 1 and 2, we'll see how the story begins. Naomi, her mother-in-law, says to Ruth, my daughter, should I not try to find a home for you? You can see what's going on in her mind at this part in the story. It's one of those tensions, which I'm sure you can identify with, the tension between needing to make good and wise decisions and ensuring that we bring God into those decisions. And yet not running ahead on our own and making all of those decisions without reference to God. It's a tension which as Christians we live with daily, don't we? Because God has given us a logic and the ability to make decisions. But we need to be careful not to run ahead of God. Now look very closely with me at the advice that Naomi gives to Ruth. I want to call it this morning, how not to go on a date. Or how not to get your man. Look at the advice that Naomi gives to Ruth in verses 3 and 4. Have a bath, put on your perfume, change out of your widow's clothing, wear something good, go down to the barn when it's dark, where all the men have been eating and drinking at the end of harvest. Make sure you wait until all the men are asleep. Be very careful to notice which is the man you're supposed to be going to. Go and lie down beside him. Uncover his feet. And then wait for him to tell you what to do next. Now let me ask you, if you're a parent of a teenage girl this morning, do you think that sounds like wise advice to give? Now I'm aware we've got a lot of younger children in church this morning, so I need to choose my words very carefully in this passage. In fact, when I looked at this passage earlier this week and I thought of the age group we had this morning, I thought, how on earth am I going to teach this passage this morning? So I need to be a little discreet. But Naomi's plan is simple, but it comes at great risk to Ruth's personal integrity, safety, and reputation. It really is a very risky plan. It's a plan that begins with Naomi identifying Boaz as his prospective groom. You just wouldn't do that in her day. In fact, it's not often done in this day where you hear the girl proposing to the man, although obviously it does happen, but not as much as the other way around. And also, there's the connection between Ruth and Naomi and Boaz as this kinsman redeemer. We need just to pause for a minute this morning and explain what a kinsman redeemer is, otherwise you're not going to understand this story. A kinsman redeemer involved enormous sacrifice and great personal cost to the person involved. God had given some important family laws to his people to ensure that if somebody died, that the widow was going to be looked after properly, that the family line did not die out, and that the land remained with their family. And what happened in Naomi's case was that she goes off to a faraway land, her husband dies, she comes back as a widow, and by this stage her land more than likely would have been given to somebody else. So when Naomi and Ruth return from Moab, they have no family and they have no land. And God's provision in his law was to ensure that that didn't happen to people, or rather that when it did happen to people, that they could have a land given back to them and that they could be remarried back into their relative's family, and through that marriage, with hopefully with children, the family line would continue. So there are two things at stake here. There's the land, which has to come back to the family. And there's the family line continuing. Now, in this case, Naomi is clearly too old in the story to have children. And so it's Ruth who's being considered as the person, in a sense, who needs to be looked after here. So I hope you're beginning to see what happens here. So this reference to Boaz as a kinsman redeemer, he is the man, in a sense. He is the man in the story who is going to be called on to get the land back to the family and also to marry Ruth, and through Ruth to have children so that the family line of Naomi's husband Elimelech continues. Are you still with me? Yes? I really don't want to do all that again, okay? So I hope you've grasped it, okay? Essentially, some family laws from God to ensure that the land comes back to the family. It has to be purchased by somebody like Boaz. Great personal expense. Great sacrifice. As he too will have to marry the widow, or in this case, Ruth. And hopefully through Ruth, as the story unfolds, the family line continues. So the land comes back to the family, and the family line continues. And we know that at this point in the story, Boaz has been identified as the nearest kinsman redeemer. Now let's get back to the story. Through Naomi's risky plan, Ruth is told to send this non-verbal signal to Boaz that marriage is in view. This is a widow, Ruth, coming out of mourning. Perfumes in the air, the uncovering of a sleeping Boaz, lying across his feet like a servant in verses 3 and 4. And Boaz is left in no doubt that Ruth is proposing marriage. Quite a story, isn't it? Daniel Block, one of the commentators on this passage, sums up the situation very well. He puts it like this. He says, this risk, this plan of Naomi's is fraught with danger. And he summarizes the situation very well. He says, her proposal, this is Ruth's proposal of marriage, is highly irregular from the standpoint of custom. A woman propositioning a man. A young person propositioning an older person. A destitute field worker propositioning the landowner. You see, culturally it goes in exactly the opposite direction that it should. And the suspense in the story grows as this highly risky plan, through this highly risky plan, Naomi places extraordinary trust in the character of Boaz and also in the character of Ruth. Because that brings us to the second scene. From verses 7 to 15, which I've described this morning as the test of a godly man and a godly woman. What's going to happen next in the story? Well, maybe we shouldn't have read it at the beginning. Maybe we should have sort of read it on the way through, because you know what's going to happen next. But the narrator deliberately creates an atmosphere that is riddled with sexual tension. I believe that's a deliberate way in which the story is written, not to spice up the story, but to drive home the point that God's people are often confronted with difficult decisions and hard choices. And as Ruth follows Naomi's instructions, we're introduced to the test of these two godly people. How is Boaz going to respond when he finds this woman lying across his feet? How would you respond if you're a man this morning, you find this beautiful woman lying across your feet in the middle of the night? Well, let's find out what happens. Verses 7 to 9. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned to discover a woman lying at his feet. Who are you? He asked. And what Naomi has asked Ruth to do here, I believe, is right on the borderline. I don't believe anything improper happens in this story. But there is no doubt from the way that the story is being told that these words are sexually charged. Is Boaz the godly man that we're being led to believe that he is? What we discovered about his character last week, two things in particular we noticed. Firstly, that in chapter 2, he's a man of standing, he's a man of integrity, he's a man of character, he's a man that people look to. We also discovered in verse 4 of chapter 2 that he was a man of God, or as John Piper described him, a God-saturated man who brought God into the workplace, who greets his workers, literally by bringing God to them. Verse 8 of the story. Boaz seems to shiver in the middle of the night. Maybe he's feeling a bit cold because his feet have been uncovered. I don't know. Who are you, is the question. I'm your servant Ruth, verse 9. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. Ruth is referring back to Boaz's prayer. If you were here last Sunday morning, chapter 2 and verse 12, Boaz prays for Ruth. See what he says in verse 12? May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. It's clear that Boaz is becoming the answer to his own prayer. It suggests maybe we need to be careful what we pray for sometimes. But Boaz immediately understands this image of shelter under the wings as a request for marriage. Not quite what Boaz expected as he lay down to sleep that night, is it? Quite an experience. I just love the way the story is told. He wakes up. Something startles him. He finds this beautiful, perfumed woman lying at his feet, asking if he will marry her. Because that's what's going on in this story. It seems, if you look at verse 10, he's quite overwhelmed by what happens here. He says, this kindness is greater than that which you showed me earlier. He says, you've not gone after the younger men. You've come to me. He can't get his head around it. All these younger men that I'm sure are attractive to you, but you've come to me. And I don't know what he looked like. Maybe he didn't look great. But he definitely was an older man in this story. But it does seem, doesn't it, that love is in the air as this story begins to develop. But I want you to notice also that although this is a very romantic story, Ruth is also confronting Boaz with his legal responsibilities. Ruth departs from the prepared script in this story. What is it that Naomi tells Ruth to do? She says to him that in verses 1 and 2, that you need to, sorry, in verse 4 rather, you go and you do what I've told you to do, and then Boaz will tell you what to do next. But Ruth seems to take the initiative here, doesn't she? She says very clearly in verse 12, in verse 9. I am your servant, Ruth, she said. I'm your servant, Ruth, she said. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. She doesn't wait for Boaz to tell her what to do. She takes the initiative and she proposes marriage. Now, things turn the corner quite dramatically here, and things become an awful lot more complicated, because now this suddenly becomes a legal matter with some serious complications. Just when everything seems to be going so well, Boaz then introduces the news that actually in verse 12, there's actually somebody else who's nearer related than he is. But he says, if this other person won't do it, he says, then I'm going to do it. End of verse 13. If he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning. It's interesting, isn't it, that Naomi's reputation is specifically mentioned here in verse 12. She's a woman of noble character. You put that against Boaz's character on the screen behind me, you'll see that these are two people of great integrity. But I want you to notice this morning that what keeps Boaz and Ruth safe in this morally ambiguous situation is not a set of rules, it's their character. They're a wonderful example for us to follow in terms of godly relationships between men and women. They are both people who bring God into their lives. They are both people who bring God into their work. They are both people who bring God into their plans. And so God will be in their relationship and in their romance. And in the verses that follow, in a culture that devalued the role and the place of women in society, you get a glimpse of the gospel of Jesus Christ that is starting to give value and integrity back to human relationships between men and women. It's wonderful the way that Boaz responds to Ruth in this situation. He speaks of her character. He says in verse 11, all of my fellow townsmen know that you're a woman of noble character. Women weren't spoken of in that sense in that particular culture. And so it's too late for Ruth to return home as this second scene comes to a conclusion. Verse 13, Boaz says, stay here for the night. And in the morning, if he wants to redeem good, let him redeem. But if he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning. So verse 14, she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anybody could be recognized. Said, don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. He also said, bring me the shawl you're wearing and hold it out. And when she did so, he poured 6 measures of barley and put it on her, and she went back to town. That's probably close to 6 times the amount she would glean in one day. So we looked at the second scene, this test that takes place between this godly man and this godly woman. And thirdly, we come back, as we did last Sunday morning, to the amazing providence of God in verse 16 to 18. I'll mention this question as we read through the chapter. Well, tell me. How did it go? You can just imagine, can't you, Naomi, sort of been waiting all night to hear the story of what's going to happen next. And it really is an understatement, isn't it? Well, how did it go? Tell me what happened. You can imagine, Naomi, can't you? Did my plan work? Is he going to marry you? Did you get married? Because it was quite possible in that scenario for them to actually have consummated their relationship together. And actually, that would be as good as marriage, which would be sorted civilly the next day. that Ruth comes home not as a married woman, but with this large gift, kind of 6 days' wages, if you like, to put it all in one day. And there's a lovely play on words in verse 17, because if you've been following this story, you'll know that when Ruth comes back from Moab, she says, I went away full, and I've come back empty. And then you look at verse 17 of chapter 3, Boaz gave these 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Lovely play on words. Here's a lovely chapter about God's providence. It's a lovely picture of how God works for the glory of his people. What a risky plan. And yet God overrules in this plan. He overrules when you and I make mistakes, when we make wrong decisions. He can overrule when we get it wrong. He can overrule when we make unwise, risky, or even wrong decisions. This chapter really is about redeeming the mess. I don't know about you, that gives me great hope. Does that give you great hope this morning? Because how often do we make decisions that are unwise? And we look back and we say, why on earth did I make that decision? It seemed like the right decision to make at the time. Or we make decisions without any reference to God. This passage shows me very clearly that God can plot for the glory of his people. That no matter what mistakes or what failures we have made in the past, if we bring them to God, as Boaz and Ruth do in this story, God can redeem the mess. My friends, don't lose sight of the providence and the sovereignty of God in this story. God is big in this story. He really is committed to working out his good purposes in the lives of his people, whether or not you can see it. Because neither Ruth or Naomi in this story actually get to glimpse the big picture. They don't know that through all of this story, God's putting together a family tree for Jesus. They don't see that. They don't even see King David. They just get a glimpse of the smaller picture. So how do you apply a passage like this to our lives today? Do we take it as a sort of how not to go on dating kind of practical advice? I want to suggest to you there's something much deeper going on in this passage. We saw as chapter 1 opens, it's all about the dark times, the bottom falling out of the world for Naomi and for Ruth. We saw in chapter 2 the shaft of hope that comes through as God's providence begins to work its way through the story. I want to suggest to you this morning that in chapter 3, as you open it, it's actually the person of Jesus Christ that pops up in this story. C.H. Spurgeon once described Boaz as our glorious Boaz. I want to suggest to you this morning as we conclude and as we apply this story to our lives, as you look at the person of Boaz in this story, that you see something of the person of Jesus Christ. And as you think of Ruth in this story, I want you to see yourself in this story as Ruth. There are 2 things that I want to apply this morning. Firstly, I think this story teaches us that Jesus Christ redeems us not because of our efforts. And that's one of the things which makes the Christian faith unique. It's that wonderful word, grace, which we've been singing about this morning already. It sets the Christian faith apart from all other world religions. Christian faith says it's not about what you do to be accepted by God. It's what God has done for you. That's what it's all about. Like Naomi's risky plan, it's very easy for us to go about the right things in the wrong way. It does seem to me in this story, and you might want to debate this on the door with me today, that Naomi is guilty of trying to fix things herself without waiting on God. Which ironically is what she does at the end of this story. Look at chapter 3 and how it finishes in verse 18. And Naomi says, here's another plan. No, she says, wait until you find out what happens. Perhaps she should have done that at the beginning of this story. She's trying to do the right thing in the wrong way. And do you know what she does? She puts Boaz's and Ruth's reputation on the line. The goal was a good one, but she goes about it in the wrong way. And when you look at this story from a spiritual perspective, it becomes even clearer. This whole incident, I believe, is designed as a powerful picture of sinful people like you and me coming to a Savior or a Redeemer. Can we do it by ourselves? Of course we can't. Can we do it by dressing ourselves up and making ourselves more presentable before God? Of course we can't. And yet even as Christians, sometimes, you know, we still try to do that. We say, yeah, we understand grace, but if I do this or that, perhaps God will recognize me a bit more and I'll be more acceptable to God. It doesn't work like that. This story we're looking at this morning makes it clear that Boaz is a picture of how God sees us. Boaz saw Ruth and he saw her heart. And that's what Jesus, our Redeemer, does. The New Testament could not make it any clearer. Paul said in Ephesians, it is by grace that you've been saved. This not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. So that no one can boast. None of us can say, well, look, I've done this and I've done that and this is my reputation and look at the good things I've done here and the good things I've done there. You will not be accepted by God on that basis. This story shows us that very clearly. No matter how we dress ourselves up, no matter what our reputations are like, God will not accept us because of how we look or because of our reputations. It is the gift of God. In other words, it's a gift that's there to be received. And the second thing I see in this passage is a wonderful picture of our salvation. Jesus Christ redeems us when we come and we humbly ask. And sometimes that's the most difficult part because we think, I've got to bring something with me. I've got to bring something good that God will accept. Ruth is a newcomer to the faith of Israel and the ways and the people of God. But boy, is she learning fast. She keeps the promise that she's made to Naomi in chapter 1, and yet she departs from Naomi's advice in this risky plan in one crucial area in verse 9. She asks that Boaz will redeem her. And that is what he does. That is an important lesson for us this morning. You see, it isn't how clean we are that impresses Jesus, our Redeemer. It isn't our good deeds. It isn't our reputations. It isn't the school that you went to or you didn't go to. It's not whether you got GCSEs or A-levels. It's not the university that you went to or didn't go to. It's not the job that you do. It's not whether you have a big house or a small house or no house or three houses. God isn't interested. Jesus isn't interested in that this morning. He is interested in what our hearts are like. That's what he's interested in. It's a humbling experience to discover that. That no matter how successful or unsuccessful you may be, no matter what you think you have done for God in this life, you'll never be any more acceptable to God because of what you have done. And the sort of heart that he wants, I think, is this picture of Ruth's heart as she comes to Boaz, this humble heart asking to be rescued. That's what Ruth is doing in the story. She's saying to Boaz, I need to be rescued. You are my kinsman redeemer. You are my savior. You are the one who's going to redeem me. And like Ruth, she comes to Boaz in this story. She comes asking that Boaz would at great personal cost to himself do what she has asked. Great personal sacrifice. And when we come to Jesus like that, humbly, acknowledging that we need his help, acknowledging that we have done wrong, acknowledging that we have broken his commands, humbly asking him to redeem us and to rescue us, he will do it. And isn't the good news that that is what he has done for so many of you here this morning? He has redeemed you. He has rescued you. Because you have come to him in that way. I've got one question to ask at the end of this morning. And that is, how is your heart with Jesus Christ this morning? It might be that you've been a Christian for a long time. Your heart is overwhelmed this morning with the grace of God because you know the only reason that you're a Christian this morning and you've been a Christian for 20 or 30 or 40 years is because of God's keeping power in your life. And you just want to say this morning, boy, I want to worship you because your grace and your mercy is overwhelming. How's your heart with God this morning? Maybe you've wandered away. Maybe your heart is cold this morning. Maybe you used to be so excited about this stuff. And God is saying to you this morning, you need to come back to me this morning. Like Ruth comes to Boaz, that's how you need to come back to me this morning. Humbly admitting that you have messed up, admitting that you have strayed, admitting that you have wandered away, and saying, I want to come back. And he'll take you back if you come back like that. Or maybe you're not yet a Christian this morning. You've never really made that decision. So can I encourage you as we close this morning to humbly come before God, to admit that you've done wrong, to admit that you've broken his command, humbly asking him to take you into his family through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Don't put that decision off.